Hello, this is Kyle Jones. Tonight we are doing a study on the Oenaes. The Oenaes, historically, were the spokesmen, scribes, and prophets, if you will, for the Sumerian kings in the antediluvian world, or the pre-flood world. Much of the information handed to us concerning this pre-flood world was given to us by a Babylonian priest named Berosus, who was a scribe and a scholar and also considered to be a prophet. He also studied the constellations and was a mathematician. He understood the old world from that perspective as scientist, historian, scholar. Berosus's work, called Babylonica, was handed to us in a three-volume set. This work was written in the Koine Greek by Berosus, though that was not his native tongue. We find the other archives from his sources placed in the Temple of Baal in Babylon, which was called Esagila. And in Sumerian, E always refers to the house of, and Gila means the high, lofty one. Some people call that the Temple of Marduk, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, his work was esteemed by the later Greek and Roman historians, such as Eusebius and Josephus, which we have much history on the Jews from concerning Josephus. Anyway, we have covered in the past the old world all the way to the diluvian or post-diluvial world. But right now, covering Berosus' work, we have these other famed heroes of the old world prior to the flood or antediluvian world mentioned by Berosus. And if we could quote for one moment these heroes and their lifespans written by Berosus himself, namely that of what we call Zeuthros. Also, we call the same hero Zeusudra, which would be Noah. In some texts, he's called Utnapishtim in the epics of Gilgamesh and Pop Gilgamesh and Bilgamesh. But as we have a quote from Berosus, here we go as follows. After the death of Otiartes, his son Zeusuthros, which is Noah, reigned for 18 Saroi, which would be 64,800 years. Altogether, there were 10 kings and 120 Saroi, which is 432,000 years. In his time, the great flood occurred, and the story has been recorded as follows. Kronos, that would be Enki and Ea, and by the way, Kronos is the Greek from where Berosus uses his source or writing to mean father time, as we get chronology. And he was also called the horned one, the one who has the corona, which again, from where we get the word chronos or corona or the crown. So we can go into very deep etymology, etymological treatment on the crown and time being one, the cycle of time on the points of the crown. Very beautiful, interesting study. Let's continue. The original name, Zeusudra, is only just recognizable in the corrupted Greek form of Berosus' day. Berosus himself was not that great of a Greek student, but he tried. But here we see shifts from Z to X and D to TH, as well as vowel changes. This is a good example of the kind of confusion of tongues which has prevented us from identifying the antediluvian heroes of Genesis in the Sumerian records. And once again, for the record, antediluvian means anti or pre, diluvian means the deluge or flood. So when you hear me say antediluvian, it means the people that lived prior to the flood, most of them with extra long lives. And the ones that were post-diluvian were after the flood. Berosus lists 10 kings who ruled before the flood, the last of whom was called Zeusuthros, again, our Noah. And interestingly enough, it has often been noted that there were also 10 biblical patriarchs from Adam to Noah, listed in chapter 5 of Genesis. But as Professor Samuel Culling, a leading archaeologist slash historian, has recently pointed out, the two traditions clearly do not derive from the same source. In Berosus, we are dealing with kings possessing exceptional reign lengths, who are not all from the same dynasty, while in Genesis, we have a traditional record that we show to be understood as a true genealogy with exceptional lifespans. Now, at this point, I'm not going to go too far, but as Dr. Samuel Noah Kramer has noted out and found or deciphered the formula for Babylonian time frames and even Sumerian time frames, but mainly Babylonian, we have divisions noted by six or multiplicities of six, such as 60, 600, 6000. So these extraordinary long life spans were used as a code or a formula to explain who they were as name by number. And of course, you might know of the simple, well, not simple, but the noted number of the beasts, 666. That was a commonality way of saying something by association, or should I say, the number of 666 meant something to this Antichrist. And I won't go into that right now, but just note that this is a very common thing to note someone as their authority by a number. Anyway, that's another story, another lecture. Anyway, let's continue here. Let's discuss the main character at the ending of this genealogy of the 10 kings. We have Enoch, and from this we have his son named Irad. Well, the biblical name Irad, which again, the son of Enoch, is believed to derive from the Hebrew verb yarad, which has the meaning, quote, to descend, end quote. The Mesopotamian tradition through the Sumerian king list and the creation epic, which we call the Enuma Elish, or the Babylonian account for the creation of the world, is that the first city to be founded in Sumer was Eridu, which we call now by the modern name of Tel Abu Sharein, once by the shores of the Persian Gulf. Well, it might be very interesting to say that Eridu in Sumerian means earth. Well, Eridu, Rata, that's the root of the word, can be found in the Hebrew, Eratz, which means the land, which we have been told in the Bible the whole Eratz was covered with water, which it was, but it did not specify the full globe, just the Eratz, or the land mass, the plot where the stage is placed and the drama is enacted. We also have the same word for earth, of course, Erath, earth, the Anglo-Saxon Arda, same word, Rada, and the Tolkienism Midgard, which we have mid, middle, or ga as the prefix to the next word, art, which is again earth, middle earth, Midgard, same word. It was first suggested by Archibald Sace in 1885 that the city of Eridu bears the eponym, or that's the placed name, or the name placed upon it, of Irad, again, the son of Enoch. In other words, that he was the eponymous, or named to, founder of the city. This suggestion still finds support in more recent scholarly discussions of Genesis. We also have a suggestion that Adam's Sumerian successors moved down, or descended, quote-unquote, from the Zagros Mountains into the plain of Susiana. It is possible, therefore, that it was Irad, which means the one who descended. And again, as I have stated to my friends and students, in the Hebrew, the names are the theology. The names are the history. The names are the eponyms to the cities. It's a beautiful text to understand and especially if we can understand Hebrew. Anyway, this Irad, the one who descended, led his people down into a pre-flood Sumer. And that, the first city, Eridu, was named after him. There is an important clue regarding the settlement of the lowlands in Genesis 4, verse 17, where we have, quote, Cain had intercourse with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. He was a city builder and gave the city the name of his son, Enoch. At first, this statement seems quite straightforward. Cain founded a city and named it Enoch. But we have come to realize that the translations of the Bible in the English can be misleading, not the Hebrew. We need to go back, therefore, to the original Hebrew to recognize that there is some confusion about who founded what here. As Robert Wilson has pointed out, the subject of the phrase, quote, he was a city builder, end quote, is by no means clear. As he quotes, normally one would expect the subject to be the most recently mentioned noun or pronoun. In this case, the name Enoch. If this interpretation is accepted, then Enoch, rather than Cain, would be the city builder. The natural conclusion, though, is to draw from this reading of Genesis 4:17, that the city built by Enoch was named after his son, Irad, and that this city was the first Sumerian city, Eridu, as originally proposed by Sasi, a very famous linguist. Indeed, the identification of the city builder as Enoch and not Cain had been suggested as long ago as 1883 by the German scholar Karl Budd. But of course, this reading of the passage is undermined by the addition of the name Enoch at the end of the verse. However, Wilson tellingly points out that the standard interpretation of Cain as the builder and his son Enoch as the eponym of the city raises some serious difficulties. Number one, the clause, Wahi Boneh Ir, which means he was a city builder, end quote, if it follows the normal rules of syntax displayed in the rest of Genesis 4's genealogy, then we therefore must refer to Enoch and not Cain, because the name Enoch immediately precedes the clause in question. Thus we have, quote, she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. He was a city builder, end quote. The sense here is obvious. Number two, moreover, in Genesis 4, verse 2, Cain is described as a tiller of the earth. In the Hebrew, we have Obed Adama. In other words, as a farmer. It would not follow the pattern of Genesis 4 to then assignate or assign him a second occupation as a city builder. This would also deprive Enoch of a proper role in the genealogy. Number three, there is no known ancient city which carries the eponym of Enoch, son of Cain, according to Wilson. Well, Wilson concludes that, quote, it is therefore possible that the name Enoch at the end of chapter 4, verse 17 of Genesis, is a gloss. That is to say, an editorial addition, or even a marginal note, which was then only later placed into the main body of the text in the wrong place once the true meaning of the statement had been lost. Thus, the original text would have been unambiguous. As we go back to the statement, Cain had intercourse with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. He, that is Enoch, was a city builder and gave the city the name of his son, Irad. If we go back again to the ancient names of Sumer, we have been listed by the Akkadian Babylonian name Uruk to be a famous city of the Sumerians. Yet, this city, Uruk, by Sumerian language, was not called Uruk, as we have probably the modern-day Iraq, but it was initially called Unuk, or Unug, which we can derive a snake from, but we derive the name Enoch from. And as a side note, the interest of this coiled serpent as a standard with the wing on top, or the wings on top, carried by Moses, called it Nakushta, does offer us the name or the root name of Enoch, and also Nakash, which is the serpent. We have the serpents with six wings who flew in the train or the verb motion of God in Isaiah 6. Again, Enoch, this very interesting and strange character, did not die a mortal death. And the Bible does state, and I can't recall what chapter, I will come back to that, that all mortal men die a mortal death. Enoch was translated, as the Bible said. Enoch and Elijah were both translated. They did not die a mortal death. Who were they? Well, that would be for another lecture. Well, returning to this Uruk, the Sumerian name was Unuk. And I do believe that probably was in the same region where Enoch was. He began his sermons, his teachings, his leading in this region. And this might very well explain why the biblical scribes, as they wrote down the names, were misplacing, if you will, and I don't even say misplacing, but writing down Uruk versus Unug, because their reference in terms of history would have been of the Akkadian and Babylonian tongue. Well, anyway, the scribes who added the name Enoch at the end of the city's name were stating in Genesis this very fact because they knew that the mightiest city in Sumer was named after this great antediluvian patriarch. Well, on the other hand, we can look at it as this, that perhaps the marginal note Enoch, proposed as I have above, was the result of a scribe adding the name of the city, which he thought was being referred to, well, Unuk, as a clarification. He may not have understood that Enoch had also built Eridu, naming it after his son Irad. And again, no dismissal to the scribes who put down later the Bible. And as we have to understand in the canon, a canonization of the Old Testament, we're now under the time of Nehemiah, which would have been around about, say, 500 BC. So a lot of history had been displaced, misplaced, but I do believe, and I still say, that these men were moved by God's Spirit. Nonetheless, the reference to this city would have been known by the Jews as Uruk, not Unug. Unug was the ancient Sumerian language. We could also suggest that further biblical links to the eponymous founders of the Sumerian cities were named that of Ur, and especially now that that region was excavated by Dr. Leonard Woolley. And it was transcribed as a logograph as Eru, Unuki, in Sumerian. The name Uru, Unuki, because it was shortened, or what we call hypocorized, to Urum in Akkadian, and then simply Uru, or Ur, in the Shemitic or Hebrew language. Therefore, Ur, meaning a city, but it did not mean the original Uru, Unuki, which might have been understood as the city of Unuki. In other words, the city of Enoch. And again, the last suggestion is that they would not have given their patriarch the name of the city, for we're not trying to state claim. But nonetheless, that's just a suggestion and a hypothesis. But what we can say is that another patriarch might have been identified with a Sumerian antediluvian city named Bad-Tabira. In this case, it would not have been something of a patriarch of the biblical line, but that of someone who was a hero, an epic hero, and as I've stated in last lectures of heroes versus Messiah, it was kind of an evil thing that man would lift himself up as hero versus Messiah. Anyway, this Bad-Tabira was the second political center after Eridu to which kingship was handed down from heaven. And again, as I've stated, Nimrod assumed the throne by king and leader and spokesman for God. The beginning of the system of corruption. Well, Bad-Tabira means settlement of the metal worker. if we take the Hebrew consonants, which make up the name Tubal, we get Tubal, T-B-L. We know that the soft consonant L often represents that of the rotex R, Ra. Thus, we might get an original Tibar, or Tibur, which could in turn stem from ancient Tibera. And the reason why I can assume such things is the further you go back into etymologies, the consonants become harder. The R preceded the L in the outgo or outflow of etymologies. Ra, then La. La being the softer consonant. Interestingly enough, the Shemitic epithet Cain or Kanu in Tubal Cain also meant smith or metal worker, which does suggest that this epithet had been added as a clarification of a little-known Sumerian word by the Hebrew author of Genesis. So there are some clues which suggest that Tubal Cain and Bad Tabira are connected in some way. Perhaps we have an original eponym, quote, settlement of Tubal, or in translation, city of the smith. In placing the regions of these early patriarchs, both in the Messianic line and out of the Messianic line, which would be the sons and daughters of Cain, we can color this historical context with a further concept of who these special people who were assigned to the kings or the leading patriarchs were. These special people that led the kings and gave advice, these wise men. Well, there is a word called apkulu or apkalu in Sumerian, which means wise men. Mesopotamian literature contains sporadic references to seven sages called apkalus who lived before the flood and who were apparently regarded as the originators of the arts and skills of civilization. Now, I recall studying under Dr. David Lawrence at David Lipscomb University on these seven sages. And they were named by different epithets. One of the leading sages was the culture hero Yu, Y-U, who found himself in China and who was supposedly the counsel for the king or the emperor of China in the Xia dynasty, which would have roughly been around 2200 BC, or maybe a little bit before that. And it was this culture hero that warned this emperor that a great flood was coming to build a containing wall to back the waters. Well, if it was right, or should I say if it was a fix of around about 2250 BC, that would have been around about the time of the flood and the account of the tongues at Babel. It is this great culture hero Yu that can be found in many texts of Far East Asian studies and their ancient predecessors. Nonetheless, let's return to this story of these culture heroes or these sages. In many written records, especially in Berosus's records of the Ones, these special sages that were assigned to the antediluvian kings were noted to have fish-like bodies with human heads. You heard me right. That was the records not only of Berosus, but many other historians and writings of the day concerning these special sage wise men. And to all intents and purposes, though, these people, these sages, were mythological creatures. That is the case for the modern writer. But then again, I say, once the mythological veils are removed, there seems to be a distant memory of some of the antediluvian patriarchs of Genesis lurking in the names and deeds of these apkalus, or these oenes. According to the apkalu tradition, the first and greatest of these sages was a contemporary of King Aalu. That would be in the Sumerian kings list, Alilim, the first ruler of Eridu. This was the purification priest of Eridu. And if you could look at Alilim, we would see somewhat of a similarity of Elohim with Alilim. Nonetheless, this name or epithet was placed upon this great priest. This priest of Eridu was named also by another term called Adapa, or one Adapa, meaning who ascended to heaven. Again, if we recall the Genesis account of Enoch, Enoch never died a mortal death, but ascended and was translated into heaven. Well, in our tablet numeration of Sumeria, we have a tablet called W20030. And in this tablet, we find the name One, that's spelled U-A-N to us, given for the very first sage. However, Uan also appears in other ancient texts in the double name form of Uan Adapa, where it has been argued Adapa is an epithet meaning the wise. One possible explanation of the myth that this wise counselor of the king was half fish and half human is to be found in the potential confusion of the word Adapa with another similar sounding Sumerian word, Utwaba, which means, quote, born of the sea, end quote. With the recognized changes from U to A, from T to D, and from B to P, we would get Aduapa, given the Apkallu's close connection with the sacred Abzu in Eridu. It would hardly be surprising to find a tradition of a sea creature derived from the epithet Adapa, even though the true meaning was probably, quote, the wise man, and not, quote, one born of the sea, end quote. According to a much later inscription of the late Seleucid period, Oenes, or Oenes Adapa, was the founder of a temple of great antiquity, perhaps the earliest sacred shrine of Eridu, the very first temple on earth. All this becomes much more significant when it is realized that by many Sumerologists and biblical scholars that they have made the direct connection between Adapa and the biblical Adam. One simple shift from the consonantal P to M gives us the biblical name. We can then read the Sumerian Adapa epic in a wholly new light. Let us briefly compare the broad themes, though, of Genesis 2 through 3 with that of the Sumerian and Babylonian accounts. Both Adam and Adapa were both tested for their obedience by their respective deities. Number 2, the test in both cases involved food, such as Adam's apple or the pomegranate. Number 3, both forfeited immortality and became mortal human beings. Number 4, certain consequences were passed down upon humanity of their actions. Adam and Adapa belonged to the first generation of humankind. And finally, their names are linked linguistically. In this same tradition surrounding the seven sages of Sumer, there is another potential biblical link. The last of the sages, Utwabzu, is said not to have died and been buried, but instead, like Adapa, was taken up to heaven. This is a similar incident to that recorded in Genesis 5:24. Quote, Enoch walked with God and was no more, for God took him, end quote. Now, there is, of course, no connection between the names Utwabzu and Enoch, but there could be with the name of Utwabzu's king. The last element of the name, En-mi-duranki. As we have in the Sumerian, En means Lord, High Priest. Mi means for us or to us. And Dur Anki means bond of heaven and earth. This is the Sumerian name for Enmi Dur Anki. My hypothesis might be fairly simple here, but I believe that the events that took place in Genesis 11 concerning Nimrod and his kingdom of Babylon, it was Nimrod that tried to rally the ancient world using the tribal dialects, which would have been the Lashon in Hebrew, the Sepa, which was the way of speaking of enunciation, pronunciation, and the Dabar, which is the equivalent to the word logos in Greek, which means the thing, the ordered thing, the law, and the mindset. He tried to take these people and put them into an order, a codex, under his religion, his new institution. And God came down and confused Balel, in the Hebrew, the Sepa, nothing else, which means that we still have the Dabar, and we still have the Lashon, but it is the enunciation, pronunciation that we have to decode through, and thanks to Dr. Jacob Grimm for allowing us to understand that in a more fuller context, I believe that we can reconstruct the deconstruction that began at Babel early on. And my final point to this is that the enunciation, pronunciation, is the study of etymology, to bring us back to our root source. It was at Babel and Babel's effect that has misled us to the original meanings of the words from Sumeria. It is the Hebrew that is given to us from God in the Old Testament text to reconstruct and to really redefine what God did in the importance of his semiotic relationship between us and him. Semiotics just meaning the relation of language to the history and culture and the modern speech or common speech of the day with one another in one accord. But as we have seen through this lecture, we have been deconstructing and reconstructing from the Babylonian language to Sumerian and to the Hebrew. With that said, can I now return and say this about Enmi Dur Anki? Do we believe that this might have been the very person who was taken up to heaven? Well, that is for a further study, and I hope to be around to make more conclusions about such a study. So for right now, thank you very much for listening. This is Kyle Jones.